Father, in the heart of your conclusion, I don't want to miss what you're stating clearly. You began by saying the solution lies in the appropriation of the canonical tradition. Help me finish what you said.
Making the canons truly our own.
Making them our own.
Yes. And that occurs in many levels.
Okay, please.
It occurs, I've tried to paint a picture on a more macro scale. I've talked about, I wanted to pique your curiosity a bit about the general state of our parish life in North America on a wider scale and in the world. But as pastors, you deal with things on a more micro scale within the confines of your own parish. So how do you make those things, how do you make the canons your own in those situations? Saedna has made allusion to something very valuable. It's particularly in the celebration of your mysteries, what people call the sacraments of marriage, of baptism, of funerals, well, of all the sacred rites. There are canons that govern these things. You make them your own by understanding them, by studying them. Why is it that it is unacceptable to celebrate a marriage in the middle of the Dormition fast? Why is it that it's unacceptable to do it within any of the church's Lents? Why fast? Why just hold the banquet with 2-inch steaks in the middle of Lent? I've seen it done. It's a failure to appropriate the canons not as laws, not as rules, but to truly understand them, to truly get to the truth that they're expressing, to study them. We have resources that are available. Yes, imperfect resources, because I pointed to a worldwide problem. The worldwide problem is we don't have good translations. We don't have good commentaries, but we have some commentaries, and we have some translations. And in the Antiochian Archdiocese, we have documents, a clergy guide, that is based on canonical principles. It truly reflects, for example, and we talk about the sacraments, we also have to talk about the organization of the parish. There is in the clergy guide, the 2011 clergy guide, the model for the way in which the parish should be organized. It's not just simply a legal nicety, because it reflects something very important. It reflects, and we'll discuss this, the apostolic ministry of the metropolitan bishop. It reflects what you see expressed liturgically when you commemorate the bishop 4 times during the liturgy, I think, at least. When you have the Andimension, when you have the Episcopal throne, when you have the distribution of Myron, all of these things speak to the fact that you are representing the metropolitan, but it speaks to something even greater, that there is no separation between the material and the spiritual within the parish. That in fact, your affair is not just simply the spiritual matters and nothing to do with the material matters and how the lights go on and on the iconostasis. But in fact, there is only one authority that's been delegated to the priests, and the deacons, the subdeacons, and the parish to cooperatively administer the parish, not only materially but spiritually. Is it possible for laity to exercise ministries in the parish? Yes, of course. In cooperation in partnership with the lower clergy? Of course. But what we deal with in America is congregationalism. It's a Protestant model. It's not based on the canons. It's based on something else. It's a very real problem. And we deal with other models dealing with marriage that are not founded on the canons. Doesn't deal with our definition of marriage. We have a, how many of us know that there is a canonical definition of marriage? Yes, there is. It's in every canon law work. The bulk of the matrimonial legislation occurs in late Byzantium. And this definition is inherited from where? From imperial law. Again, Protestant notions that we can't have something canonical come from imperial law. Yes, we can. And we'll discuss that. Because there's a different meaning. We reject the words caesaropapism. By the way, that's a target insult against all of you. If anyone ever talks about the Eastern Roman Empire as caesaropapism, be aware that that came from the Protestants in the late 16th century. And it's a target insult against the heirs of Eastern Rome, the Orthodox Church. Because certainly we have to have a correct understanding of the position that the emperor exercised for close to 15 centuries. Well, more than maybe 13, 12, well, if you have all the non-Christian ones. But nevertheless, we have to understand that a lot of legislation that we inherit comes from imperial sources. And it governs us today, particularly with the way in which we think of divorce. Is that about
Could I follow up with a quick clarification about something? Because when we hear the word pastoral today,
yeah.
I remember the days when I was at St. Vladimir's Seminary and Father Alexander Schmemann, our dean, would scoff at that of the term pastoral theology. He would say, what is pastoral theology?
I'm sorry.
We unfortunately tend to think of what is pastoral, which is wrong, think of what is pastoral as being lenient or somehow compromising to what is canonical. The statement, unlike civil law, the canons express the church's pastoral life. Now help me correctly understand pastoral life.
It's non-binding precedent. Non-binding precedent. When we speak of the application of the canons, and fundamentally we are talking about the hierarchical application of the canons based on the apostolic ministry under the guidance of the Holy Spirit, we are speaking of pastoral. And it does not mean lenient. We are talking about, if you want to substitute a word for it, substitute the word incarnational. Incarnational. We are articulating the truth given the circumstances. What would be the truth to articulate? That's a heavy burden. Our hierarchs do it every day. And we are called as priests and clergy to also exercise our discretion. I will bring up a simple example. The construction of a church. It has to be done with the materials at hand. But it has to represent authenticity in the worship, in Orthodox worship. It's governed by standards of where we place iconography, of how it is constructed. It is readily apparent when those standards are not followed, and it's unsuitable for worship. As pastors, as priests, we have responsibility to guide our flock towards those standards. So why would, this is a point I'm not sure of in the Antiochian Archdiocese, very sure in the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese. every metropolitan approves the plans that are used for the construction of a new parish church, a new church building, because to make sure that the priest in working with the laity have actually produced something that conforms to canonical standards, to standards used for Orthodox worship. I think you certainly must have something here that is parallel to this. How could a church proceed forward without anything, without any guidance? Does this answer some of your questions?
Yeah.
But pastoral does not mean lenient. It means incarnational. Anything else?
Yeah?
Thank you.